Hello, and welcome back to another TDAB episode. Armin, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing pretty great. Been a good good start to the semester. I've got pretty engaging classes. I'm out of intro stuff. I'm doing more just like read this and let's talk about it in class kind of stuff. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah,
all things considered.
I've always enjoyed group discussions in class.
Me too. I've never, some people get awkward around them, but y'all, if you listen to this podcast, you know how much I talk. I don't have an issue with seminar style classes.
Same.
I always particularly enjoyed them. I don't mind lectures. Depends on the subject. But yeah, we're doing pretty well.
Yeah, that's fair.
It drops.
Good. Glad to hear.
Yeah. It's cold as shit. It dropped like 2 feet of snow. Most of that is melted now. It's hanging around the 40s. So, aside from that, we're chilling. We're not doing too bad at all. I was just recommending Chip a book that I'm reading for one of my classes. And if any of y'all are interested in this sort of thing, because, Chip and I are both mythology nerds, it's called The Elder Edda. It's one of the only sources we have on Norse mythology. It's translated from a book found under a mattress in the 13th century. I have a copy that's edited by Andy Orchard. There's another one with a slightly different translation, but it's a lot of fun. It's essentially Nordic poetry. It's a fun book. I was just recommending that to Chip because I know Chip is into that sort of thing. There's a lot of references that you'll find to like lore book stories that have taken stuff from it. So yeah, if you're interested, we have an ever-growing reading list. As y'all know, we have a lot of stuff on our plate. But if you're interested in some Norse mythology, read The Elder Edda. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, from what Armin described, it does sound really interesting. There's a little bit off. There's a little bit more that you described, too, before we started recording. I was like, all right, it does sound intriguing and where it connects and everything. So
yeah,
everyone knows that I don't read very well, so who knows if I'm going to get around to it.
The man who started the book podcast, because this was your idea, does not read.
Oh, definitely. 100% was my idea. Yeah, definitely. 100%. That being said, I do want to say that I am very sad to say the Chiefs are going to the Super Bowl.
Oh, are you on that train too? I mean, I don't like the Chiefs for like the normal reasons. I honestly don't care about the Taylor Swift stuff.
100%. 100% the normal reasons. It has nothing to do with Taylor Swift.
Fuck Mahomes and the rest of the Chiefs.
Granted, I do, if I was drinking, I would love to play the drinking game of how many times, like every time you see Taylor Swift, like you take a shot or something, right? Facts. Take a swing.
No, I find it funny, but honestly, I think the hate, just because just because she's there, I mean, it's not her fault that the NFL and the media is making such a big deal out of it. Like, I mean, come on, like she deserves to be happy.
Oh, definitely. I have nothing wrong with that. Yeah, I'm annoyed that just the camera always has to go to her within 3 seconds of any catch by Kelsey or what. It's just,
Oh, yeah, yeah. Honestly, I feel like I'd be a bit mad if I were him, although obviously that's a problem in their relationship that they're probably not going to come across. But listen to the New Heights podcast sometimes. It's a lot of fun. Like, honestly, the podcast that Travis and Jason have. They're very good storytellers. They're a lot of fun. So like, I've got nothing against either of them. I quite like them.
Yeah. No, I don't either.
Still rooting for the Lions though.
The Lions are out, dude.
Oh, they lost last night. Fuck. You can tell I don't keep up with this shit.
By 3 points.
Fuck.
They were crushing them.
It's the only.
Like I was like, good God. Like it was like 14-0 at one point. I was like, goodness gracious. I thought the Detroit had it, but no, they lost. So it's the 49ers and the Chiefs.
Oh, that's disgusting.
Right?
That's so nasty.
I know.
I mean, I don't really care about NFL anyway, but
it's bad.
Yeah. I was pulling for Detroit in the way I was pulling for the Cubs in 2016. it's been so long since they've lost. I just wanted to get it.
Cubs, they pulled through, which I'm happy about.
They did pull through. That was a stacked team, too.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. And they all got traded. I don't really have anything else, guys. I went and got some golf clubs. Yeah. Trying to get into golf. Oh my God, guys. I'm sorry about Betty. I have no idea what's wrong with it right now. Give me 1 second.
No, y'all are stuck with me again. Hence the Armin monologues about life and random shit. We don't know what's happening with Betty. Chip can cut this out if he wants to. But yeah, let's see. If I had this like a live like chat, I'd respond to anything that y'all had to ask. So I'll go ahead and plug the email. If there's anything that y'all, you know, want to talk about, questions, comments, concerns, feel free to reach out to us at tdabpodcast@gmail.com. Actually, it might be tdabpod. Anyway, we answer questions within a reasonable amount of time sometimes. More often than not, it's unreasonable. That's mostly me. Chip's better at responding to them than I am. But reach out if you've got any comments, any questions, any concerns. We'd be more than happy to answer them or respond to them. We love hearing from y'all. Aside from that, Chip is still gone. I am still isolated. So, yeah, that's about it. Reach out if you've got anything on the any questions, comments, concerns about the podcast. We're always happy to respond at tdabpod@gmail.com.
Yeah, and that is in our descriptions, by the way. So if you click read more, you'll see it down at the bottom. Yeah, sorry guys, I was off the podcast. I don't know what Armin said, but
I'm terrible.
Thank you guys for listening as always.
I'm terrible at monologues if they're not about something.
I'm about to say you're great at monologues. It just has to be about something you're passionate about.
Precisely.
Because I remember one time, if you guys listen to that episode, you remember there was a solid 5 minutes of him just going on about Destiny 2.
That happens.
For the story lore.
All the time. And honestly.
Not for 5 minutes straight.
It's been a while since I've gone on a 5 minute straight rant, but let's be honest. 5 minutes about Destiny lore is such a disservice because I regularly talk for hours about that.
I know. Maybe we should just have a Destiny podcast.
Low-key.
We'll just do a special. We'll just have you do a monologue of the Destiny lore. You're just going to record yourself and then we're done.
Low-key. We could do a special of me talking Destiny lore.
If you guys want a special of Armin speaking completely Destiny lore, all I need is one person. And I'll be glad to make sure Armin has that out there, and that would be the episode special.
Oh my God.
A random special we have. I'm okay with that, guys.
That would be absolutely awful. I don't think anyone would want to hear that. I don't think we have any Destiny players here listening it.
No, you underestimate it, dude. You underestimate it. Oh, I do want to say thank you to Ranger Hoaf. I'm pretty sure. I'm sorry if I'm missing it. There's a Twitter account that messaged me talking about some of the history that was there about Longbows and stuff. He corrected, or more informed, not corrected, but he informed more about the history of bows and longbows, and also a little bit more into the whole sight that we were having, or the whole thing about seeing in your peripheral vision better and like in black and gray.
Was that right about that?
Thank you very much.
I didn't check my science.
Yes.
Hey, let's go.
If you want, I will read you his response.
Yeah, if y'all might have heard that name before, Ranger is a longstanding fan of the podcast. Longstanding. Ranger joined us back in the early days of the Lights Are Alagazia podcast.
Yes, the good old FTA, baby.
Which was
he said,
going on 3 years ago.
Okay. Oh my God.
Right?
Yes. Now my dog's attacking me.
Hi, Betty.
If you want to be a part of the podcast.
I miss you too.
Trust me, you're on the podcast. They all heard you. You're okay. No. Ranger goes, the Mongols and the Turkish tribes weren't the only ones to use a short / recurve bows. They're just the ones who use bows on horseback to any good success. But until England conquered Wales, everybody either used short / recurve bows or crossbows. Another thing he said was, as for the eyes, you can actually see better in the dark out of your peripheral vision than staring directly at something. So that might have been also another reason why Gillen looked away during his scouting.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a good segue to write into this section.
Yes.
Because we're dealing with everything.
And I have been absolutely evil to Chip.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. But it's okay. I've done it many times to him, so it's okay.
I don't know. I'm pulling some punches. Sorry, I keep cutting you off. I've been pulling some punches.
That's fair.
Some punches, especially in this book. I apologize.
No, it's all good. It's all good. It's all worth it. If you guys recall last episode, we left them the Iridians and the Rallowans surrendered, and Will had just beaten Hassan in the horse race to get back Tuck. And we're starting at chapter 35. We're going to read through 45 for this section, guys. We're starting off with Will. I'm so glad that the tribe takes a liking to Will. I'm so glad that everyone's happy and, you know, no one's upset about the outcome of the race. Yeah. Everything is just good vibes all around, right? I'm very glad about that. Very glad that everyone can be happy about it too and just chill, you know, having a good time.
So what happens when no one loses money.
Yeah. Well, okay, they said something in there. It almost sounded like they did lose money.
No, he was saying that no one bet on Will, so no one lost any money.
Okay. Because I'm going to say, like, the way he said it almost sounded like someone did. I was like, I don't think anyone did, though. Yeah, I know. She just paused at me.
I'm sorry. Yeah, from what I'm seeing on screen, Betty is, like shoving out of his chair. She's got her front paws like on his back and she's like pushing him, like fully trying to move him. It's absolutely
you can't see it, but her tail is just wagging.
Yeah.
Enjoying it. Enjoying every moment.
Her head pops up like an up periscope and she starts shoving
him. Yeah, it is ridiculous. So he's chilling out. And I honestly I felt really slow when I realized it was a Bedouin scout that was the one who was also scouting. I felt so freaking slow when I read that. I was like, of course, because who else would be out in the middle of the desert?
Yeah.
Literally, who else would be there? No one. Other than the other nomadic tribe that we've been talking about the whole entire time. No, of course not them, but just it happens. And I think a part of me just believed that they were so far away that it couldn't have been them. I'm going to go with that, but I also felt really slow when I realized that it was that. So the Bedouin scout comes back with the word saying that, you know, Will's friends are the ones that got captured. He, you know, they are now surrendered, which is really crazy. And the whole situation. But the biggest thing, I was actually pretty impressed. Because as Will here, right, he's been in a very... he had a stressful situation, right? You know, almost dying, saved, the loss of Tug possible, having a horse race, and then it's been a few days after that. Now he's learning that all of his friends are being captured instead of just Arak. And he's trying to understand what was going on or what was wrong because he thought they were up, you know, at one place. But because when they described, he's like, oh, there's another hostage with the other hostage. And he describes them. He goes, oh, that could only be Arak. But I thought Arak was with the Iridians, you know. So a lot of information is being put onto him, right, at this one point that he's realizing and, you know, resolving. And I'm really glad that he kept a level head here because we saw, I think it's a great way of showing a little bit of character growth, but I think it's great. I think it's even more great because it shows the character growth between the actual chronological order of this happening, right? Because this is technically before 5 and 6. So I think it really shows that little bit of restraint and growth before he even gets to book 5 and 6 when he's, you know, having to take care of his own thief and everything.
Yeah.
I think we're really showing, as Flanagan was trying to show, the little bit of connection between, you know, him being the ability to go and do this on his own and, you know, still be a part of an apprenticeship.
He also has a great grasp of like Halt and Gillen's process. So he knows the Ranger process really well and he knows his mentor really well. And so like as he's hearing, getting all this information, he like retraces the steps. He puts the pieces back together of like, okay, they must have done this and then this must have happened to get them in that situation.
Exactly. And with that, I think he is very much, you know, I think if he looks back at himself, he's like, oh, my brain's really working as if, you know, I was in Halt and Gillen's shoes, because that's what he's been trained to do. And he's learning it very well. I like how Umar is very, you know, open to trying to talk to the council to see what they can do. He's not promising anything. off of it, and he's like, I like how he's very much like let me phrase this, I know my dad did this a lot, because as Armin knows, and a lot of you might know, I'm very much, as my dad likes to say, ready, fire, aim kind of person. And so I usually just literally jump the gun and just go ahead and do things without really thought. And I like Umar here, where he's very much being a father, being, look, just relax for an hour. Let me talk to the council. We'll go from there. Instead of just, because Will here, me, is like, well, I'm going to go save him. See ya. Like, that's his thought process, which would have been mine too. So I really, like, you know, it's really good to see that kind of a figure to help Will out in this situation.
I didn't think this when I was reading this section, but the way you just phrased it very much reminds me of the, you mustn't be hasty, Master Meriadoc. Like Treebeard in the end. Obviously not that slow. But
I'm about to say, that was a harsh, like, I skip through that part every time in the movie. I cannot watch those because it is so slow.
That's the point.
Yeah, it is bad. It is bad. But it wraps up. Will goes back to Tug, unloosens his saddle a little bit so he gets comfortable. Apparently, you know, Will's with this heat and everything, he kind of dozes off a little bit, but he gets woken up by Umar. And Umar has some great news. He says, look, the council and I have spoken. We're going to help you save your friends. And not just your friends, but also Salithin and the Rydians, because they're, you know, because he also knows that they had an alliance at one point. And he knows that the big thing, and this is one of the things that he talks about here, is Salithin was a very honorable man. And there is a chance where there's a much less honorable person to be in charge of the Rydians if Salithin were to die.
Locally, yes. Because remember, Salithin is the wakir of the town and like the province specifically. And that he's not the overall like head of a Rydi.
No.
But yes, Umar is very much so like, you know, this is an honorable guy. We're somewhat responsible for the capture. It goes back to that sort of moral principle of like everyone, the mainstream is morally upstanding and honor bound.
Exactly.
In Flanagan's worlds.
Exactly. He's going to take, and if I recall, correct me if I'm wrong, he's taking 70 guys with him. And the reason is because he just can't spare to leave the women and children completely alone.
Yeah.
And so they're leaving, if I recall, 40 guys behind to help make sure they're okay in the oasis, protected, and then take 70 guys on bareback. Or not bareback, or horseback. Going into chapter 30, well, at the end of the chapter 35, Will is very gracious. They get ready to go. Chapter 36, we're back with the Aridi and the Ralloans. And this is very much the next second after, or like a few seconds after the last chapter where he says, let's talk terms, because they're negotiating like what to do, how to do it. And Usul is allowing very graciously for the Aridi soldiers to leave with only two canteens of water.
And no shoes and no horses in the fucking desert.
In the fucking desert. And I was about to say, not only would they fight if they were asked to, not only would you know, Usul lose members in the fight, but I think it's just too many prisoners to handle.
Yeah.
Like, if you're a nomadic tribe, let's be honest here, there's only so many people you can take as prisoners at one point, at one time.
And even if you're not, like, anytime you have a party moving, and, you know, they talk about this a bit, I think it's in 4. Oh, no, sorry, I'm thinking of a different flag. Okay, never mind. But it takes space, it takes resources, and it takes extra people to guard prisoners. And so it really isn't that practical to take them unless you're trying to prove a point.
Exactly. So in the end, it's Salithin's choice, you know, to either let them all die right there or let them go, which is a big weight. Because, you know, he believes that they will die, you know, as they're leaving, right? But he chooses to let them go and hope for the best, basically. I love Gillen. He still has a little bit of charm about him. Because he, if I recall, he's, you know, hit in the back or something. He just kind of looks up the dude. It's like, oh, I just like to remember faces.
Yeah.
And he just smiles. Like, it's okay. And just continues. And I get Eric. Sorry, if you're going to say something about that. But I get, I was going to move on to Eric when they see Eric.
Yeah, I was too.
I get that Eric has been treated horribly and, you know, not been well fed, you know, a prisoner. He's been a prisoner. I get it. But I feel like he could have been a little bit nicer or at least waited for Holt to explain the situation before he takes so many small jabs at them.
Dude, I was cracking up because, I mean, like,
let's be honest.
In that situation, if this was you and I, both of us would be in the mood where, like, there's not really anything to do other than to laugh about it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and so, that Svengel, when I told you to go get the Irali ones, this isn't what I had in mind.
We got them surrounded from the inside.
Yeah. So, at that point, it just, you can't avoid the quips at that point.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Like, if you had been an Eric, and I would have been the Irrelevance, you would have said the exact same shit.
Definitely. But my bigger problem is more so with how he treated Salitha when he comes in.
Mm.
Because he very much, and I think he and Holt obviously have a very mutual respect for each one another. And I think if Eric would have just been like, hey, Holt, what's the deal? And Holt was like, look, Salitha's our friend right now, and he's, you know, he's genuinely trying to help. I think Eric would have like backed off and like not has been such a dick.
Fair.
But that was my main problem. Not necessarily the quips with like Svengel and like the other dudes, but more so with how he treated Salithin. Because I feel like, you know, there's a reason obviously why Salithin's still, you know, also being in prison, right? Like, it's not just Holt. You gotta love Horace at the end of this chapter. So when's mealtime? You gotta love him. Gotta love Horace. Chapter 37, they're on the trail, they're going, and what we learn is that with the route that they're supposed to take, projected to take, they already know that they're going to be going to Y location, I forget the name of it, but, you know, the cliffs, where there's a small Aridi village, town, that they usually overrun and take over for a few years, the Tulugi to do, So the Bedouin are just going to go ahead and make a beeline for that town. They're not doing, you know, anything crazy. They're just going to go ahead and straight there, which cuts down a lot of time. They're really smart in the travel. They travel, you know, as they did earlier with the Riddy group. They travel 4 hours before the sunrise, you know, to about 4 hours after, rest during the middle of the day, you know, and then, you know, a few hours before sun reset, and then a few hours after, and then rest. They do that for a couple of days, and, you know, even Will realizes how much, you know, space and how much distance they've traveled and how efficient it actually is, even though it's, you know, weirdly spaced, how actually efficient it is going. After a couple of days, they run into the Aridi, the ones that were left to die from the Tulugi, which is great for them, I would think. You know, all around, it is a good situation, right? They really have no, as Armin said and mentioned, no shoes, no water, in the middle of the desert, you know, no weapons, no horses, and here the Tulugi come, and they're able to pretty much rescue them, and figure out the whole situation. The lieutenant of the Aridi recognizes Will. He's like, oh, I know exactly who you are, or like, you know, I know you're a part of our group, which obviously helps. And not only that, but they're allowing them to rest with the Tulugi. They're getting their water, they're getting food, they're going to stay for the afternoon and evening to rest the next day, and they're going to help take back or help rescue the team.
There's two things that I love in this section, specifically on 276. I don't know if we have the same page numbers, but two things. One, I love the respect they give to Alum, the lieutenant, and the acknowledgement that he maintained an excellent discipline. And he, like, that he successfully, like, kept them alive for 2 days on two skins of water. Like, over 30 guys. It's like I love the respect that they give him and the acknowledgement of him like being a good soldier and a good leader. It's always like nice and appreciated when you acknowledge like a tertiary or quaternary character like that. Two, we get a good mark of Will's character development. It's a very subtle one. And it's things like these that sort of help you show a gradual growth in character development as opposed to, well, bam, they're different. Because if you look, Will says, he says they have a good officer. He had been tempted to interrupt the lieutenant immediately and ask for news of his friends, but he saw that the man was close to exhaustion and thought it better to let them tell his tale. That is different of Will. Will is very impulsive. He was like constantly interrupting Halt, especially in the early books. And so,
I say, if we remember, there's so many questions.
Yeah. And that is a great example of very subtle character building and how you show over time very gradually that your character is changing.
Yes.
Without it being, and that makes it much more realistic and much more relatable as this gradual process of this character, specifically growing up, which is how a lot of characters do change. So Will checking his question, letting the man finish, and then moving into, well, like complimenting him and supporting him in his ability is a big change for Will. It's just one that's phrased very subtly, which is done and paced very well.
I completely agree. I think it's very well done in terms of just character growth. And I think we see a lot in this book, which we should. But, you know, from the get-go or from the early on books, like Armin was saying, the subtle changes over time. And if, like I said earlier, if you put these in chronological order of, you know, actual time that they're occurring, it really does. Because I feel like there's growth in this book that he was already grown into in 5 and 6, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Which to me makes even more sense how well placed and how well he writes this book, because I think one, it's hard to write. He's born as an adult. I think it's hard to write into a child's mindset or, you know, that type of thing. And then, you know, you watch him age, you know, growing of age story, basically, in a sense. And, you know, you watch him do that situation change and that growth. And then and after you're doing so much of that, you have to pull back on that character and like backtrack a little bit of like, and it's not by much. It's not like he goes in flashbacks to like a childhood memory, you know, but it's just enough for us to realize there's how much he really did grow in 5 and 6.
Very that's what I precise see. Interim that I would imagine took a shit ton of work. Not that writing doesn't take a shit ton of work in general, but specifically to get that precise of like an interim feeling. Is incredibly impressive.
Exactly. And with that, chapter 37 is very much Will getting caught up in the situation and the agreement that the Iridia is going to help the Tuliki rescue the party group.
The Iridia helped the Bedouin rescue the party from the Tuliki.
Sorry, yeah, my bad. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry. Yes, not the Tuliki. So many tribes out here, man. Just kidding.
Three names.
It's actually four names. The other Rowlands also, dude.
Oh, okay. Come on.
Just saying.
All right.
But yes, four names. As Army corrected me, it is the Iridi helping the Bedouin defeat and, you know, rescue their friends from the Tuliki. That's the correct way to put this. Going to chapter 38. As they had discussed earlier, the prisoners. Yes, the traveling is harsh, but because the Holt and Gillen did so good at their legit job of shooting a bow and arrow, they're treated the worst.
Yep.
As they're traveling, they finally get to the destination. Oh, and as they're traveling, Evelyn does get to ride a small horse, because, as also discussed earlier, for being a woman, she's more profitable. To be a girl slave, and so they want to, you know, make sure that there's nothing injured about her or anything wrong, so she could be sold for a top dollar. So she is very lucky to get to ride a horse while everyone else is, you know, on foot, getting beaten up every chance. You know, they talk about sudden movements, and so if they fall, they get hit too, and like change of direction, and so just all these things to produce a reason to hit them. basically, yeah. even though they just hit them freely anyway. They finally get to the... I think they're just at camp. But they finally get to the town in this one, and they're put into a cave. And there's a moment where Gillen and Holt, they're looking over and seeing Evelyn tending to Horace's wounds. Which Horace is just playing up theatrically.
He's milking it. He's milking it.
Big time.
To put it like Holt does, what a faker.
And I'm not going to say names or say who this could be, but we definitely know, everyone does, certain people who would definitely milk any situation out for every ounce of they could get. Just putting it out there.
It's all of us.
I don't think
all
so.
Four of us, dude. Let's be honest here.
I don't think you milk it.
I do when I'm sick. I'm dramatic as fuck when I'm sick.
I only get sick like once every 2 years.
Yeah, I know. You do too. I mean, you don't milk it.
I don't milk it. Much. I just can't.
Yeah,
oof.
That's fair. That's fair. The other two arguments can be made.
They milk the hell out of shit.
Yeah, they do. I do not deny being a dramatic ass bitch, but agreed.
I don't think I do it that much.
No.
Maybe I do.
Not that much. There's some milk going on with all of us. Like I said, all of us are guilty to some extent. But
sure. I'll agree to that to some extent.
Not as much as Horace.
Pretty women. It's what they do. It's pretty women. It's what they do.
I think all men. I think all men milk it in the presence of a pretty woman. I mean, come on.
Precisely. But to be a faker, a true faker, as Horace is, it's impressive. And Eric is joking around. He's trying to still lighten up the situation. He knows the situation they're in, but he's still trying to be, I won't say positive about it all, but like, he's lighthearted, right? He realizes there's not much he can do. I love how he jokes with Holt about, you know, oh, I heard that you just, you know, settled down with some old, like, what's it called, an old witch or something like that.
Plump motherly widow.
Yep. And Holt's just like, better not have Pauline hear you call her a plump widow.
You need your ears to fit that ridiculous helmet.
Yep. Yeah. I love him.
Great back and forth. Flanagan is great at writing banter.
Oh, it is. It's very well done. It's never too much, but it's just like it, and it's a very like it's also like personal banter too. Like it's nothing like, you know, it's nothing like just like quick words here and there. Like I'm very like I think both of us are very situational humor.
Yes.
Whereas
yes.
like, you know, this is still very kind of situational, but Eric's still like making a jab without having the situation come at, like outright easily. Yeah. They're right. Toshack is the one to be behind all this shenanigans stuff. And we finally get to meet him. I'm not going to lie. I think Toshack just got super lucky with who's there. Like everyone, he's like, oh my God, thank you. But I think he just got completely lucky because I think he would have been just as thrilled if he only had Eric. Putting it out.
No, that's fair.
Yes, he probably would. He would have been like, "Okay, where's Fang going? Your crew? We have to deal with that." But overall, I think, I think he just got really lucky. I like how Evelyn tries to stand up. Like, you know, she tries to be like stand up for the guys and be like, "Look, there's nothing you know you can do. That I'm going to give the seal away, so you get the contract." And get to like, and get to be over Jarl and everything. And Toshack also knows that, you know, she would go for the most money. And so he's like, well, I'll just torture the dudes until you give it up. Yeah. Which is, I'm not going to lie, pretty smart of him.
It's pretty bleak. Like this chapter in particular, they've got some quips and stuff, but yeah, torture. And...
yeah. Svango just being a Scandian, you know, talk about wrestling. You saw just being a dick. Because I don't know if you guys remember this, but there's a moment where Holt makes a quick jab at Usul, and Usul tries to slap him, but Holt just barely moves where he's able to kind of like go with the swing, and so the actual impact isn't hard at all. And Usul decides to grab his buddies and hold Holt, and so he just beat the living crap out of him.
Yep.
So dick move, dude. Not gonna lie. Dick move.
Yeah.
And, you know, everyone leaves, and then the Tulagi, Usul, and Toshak leave. Everyone crowds around Holt. And I just love Holt's confidence and will. I love his mentality, his spirit, and, like, his, you know, belief, you know, and will. Because he goes, like, you guys forget, there's still will out there to save us. I just love that. You know, that shows true, like, will and will. Belief and will? I think that's a better way to put it. Which I like. I like to see that. I think that's the end of chapter 38. Very much just they get to town and treated shitty, and they finally get to see Toshak. Which resolves to say that it is Toshak. You know, it's not some random dude.
Yeah.
You know, it could be some random dude. They're like, wait, it could be like a big plot. So it's like, oh. But I think Flanagan's pretty like, from what I've read of his books, he's not very big on like the big plot.
No, he's a pretty straight shooter. There's not much.
Yeah. Which is good. Yeah. Like, a good choice is actually pretty nice. Because like a lot of times when reading, I always try to assume the big plot twist. And when I assume it and then it happens, I'm like, okay, cool. But having a book where like I try to assume maybe a plot twist and there isn't one, I'm just like, oh, wow, that's actually the situation that's happening. Okay. And I think it's kind of cool. Chapter 39, very simple. The Betterlin arrive. They kind of organize. They're going to talk about how the plan to set up is that, you know, they talk about it overnight. I would kind of combine 39 and 40 because they kind of just kind of go together.
Yeah, yeah.
39, they arrive. They kind of sit down and situate. And the other half of 39 is the big talk about executing everybody. Toshak says, look, I want you not just to execute the Rangers and Oberyarl or Eric and Spangle. I want you to execute Evelyn also. And the big thing is the big reason is so there is no trace and there's no one left to be like escape and spill the beans on him, basically,
yeah.
And say what actually happened. He wants he wants all evidence destroyed. Going to chapter 40, the plan is set. The plan is they're going to have 25 Aridi be paired with 25 Bedelin, and they're going to kind of infiltrate the town and kind of scatter amongst the town they sent out a scout, I'm pretty sure. For who it was. Oh, well, I guess the lieutenant and Will went, right? And when they come back and they get the news about the executions and everything. And so the deal is they're going to split 25, paired with 25. They're going to infiltrate, scatter, sleep for the night, wake up, and be ready at the market for the executions. The other group of Bedelin are going to stay in the canyons on horseback, waiting to charge in, which is very a nomadic and Bedelin style of attacking and having fighting, is charging on horseback. And so and they're going to wait for Will to climb up to wherever he needs to be and get settled. And once they see him start climbing and see him in location, that's going to be their signal to come start coming out of the canyon, because it's going to be a very, very small window for everything to happen.
They're basically they infiltrate the town. You know, they send their people in beforehand so that they can, you know, throw the cloaks off and start the fight in the courtyard. Sort of musketeer style, if you've seen that, the adaptation of it, one of the adaptations of it.
one of the billion adaptations of it.
Or Pirates of the Caribbean is a better one, you know, when Will throws off the cloak and, to save Jack from the gallows, like that kind of thing. They're gonna do that dramatic entrance. And when Will sends up the signal, which, as we find out, he has trouble with, Will sends up the signal, the Bedouin come charging in to take them by surprise.
Yes. Going to chapter 41, the cave opens, they're talking, you know, they get their foods, horses out by the door, kind of overwatching, and once it closes, he talks about how there's this big stage being built, and everyone's like, oh, they're doing a play, and Horace, no cheerful thoughts, he's like, well, it could just be an execution.
Yep.
Speaking it true, tried, reality, right there. Infiltration occurs, the guys are into town, they're able to get in, and Will and the lieutenant, his name's Alum, right? Alum and Will are paired up together, and their situation is they try and find a place. They find this small little inn, coffee house more so, I think. And they enter, they kind of scout out the town first to try and find Will's vantage point that he wants to have. And once they find it, they then go to a place nearby to sleep. They get into it, and they get it. Alum kind of gets into it with this dude.
Yeah, this guy's he's watching them, sort of starts arguing with them, asking them. He gets all nosy, and they argue him off the first time.
Yeah, and I fully, you know, when Alum's like, oh, don't worry about it, he'll have something else to, you know, be nosy about tomorrow. And Will's like, not so sure about it. I put on there in my notes, I was like, before I read on, I think Will has right to stay cautious about, and I call him the fat man. Instead of Saudi or Soda or Swada. Yeah, whatever his name was, I just call him fat man. I think it's because I've been watching a lot of Family Guy recently, and that's what Stewie calls Peter, the fat man. Going into chapter 42, I'm going to say 42, 43 kind of combined here, as a jumble, as we're kind of wrapping this up.
Things are picking up, they're, plot speeding up, things are intensifying, they're about to, you know, get executed, and all the pieces are moving into place.
Exactly. So it's all getting balanced at the cave, they let out the cave all together at once. Even Holt is realizing that Evelyn's being bound, he's like, oh shit, like, is this everyone being executed? He kind of like, and he, again, we kind of see his train of thought, just like Will had a train of thought earlier, like the situation that's at hand, and what's going on. And called it, the fat man was being a jerk, the one who's being a dick is just slyly watching and see what these guys do. Yep. When I mean guys, I mean Alum and Will. He's watching them very carefully. And he apparently is buddy buddies with one of the Tulagi leaders or sub leaders. So he's going to go run off as fast as a fat man can and tattletale on Will and Alum's position and a character, I guess. And basically saying that,
he alerts Alum. The guards to Will and Alum's nefarious activities, and they interrupt them.
Exactly. I'm glad Umar has faith in Will, because in the beginning of chapter 43, we kind of cut back to the Bedouin waiting in the caves. He's like, and they're like, oh, should we go ahead and get going? And Umar's like, no, let's wait for Will. Like, Will said he's going to put a signal up, let's wait for him. Which I think shows a lot of respect for Will from Umar's position, because, you know, especially if you are a leader and you're having to follow someone else, especially because he mentions it earlier how, you know, his warfare is very much open land run into. The small town combat is not his style. So his willingness to listen to Will and the situation that's going at hand, and trust that Will would do what he said and what he needs to do, I think is great. They say as the prisoners are coming up to the stage, Holt is stopped right there with Usal, And then Gillen is, to show that it's going to be at least Hulk first to die and then Gillen to die, because they are the most hated. By everyone, because they killed some of the brothers, basically. Toshak and Svangle, still going at it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just classic Scandian babble, basically. And Usal's like, watches it, he's like, he respects it, but he's like, nah, this is my show, dude. Like, shut the fuck up.
And that is a key point, too, because the setting we have here is very spectacular. You know, they make this huge showing of this, and the executioner he's here to put on a show. It is not just an execution. It is almost a game. It is an event. They have this whole crowd going. Usal and Toshak are watching, and the executioner is, you know, spinning the sword. He's doing all this crazy stuff to get them riled up, and it's purely for entertainment at this point. Yeah, something to make the people more happy with the Tu'alafi like being around and making the soldiers, you know, more like confident, you know, inspire them, and they're just making this huge scene of the execution.
Oh yeah, and talk about the dude spinning a sword. Talk about a theatrical.
Oh yeah,
very theatrical. Which is fine. Like, I get it. And I get why Usal did it, like Armo was saying. It's to boost confidence in his own guys and show the Aridi that, like, there is no mercy with him. And, you know, that's what it is. And then, the dude with the sword decides to try and show off and try and make the prisoners look scared and, you know, cower. And he comes right down on Horus's neck, but he stops it just inches. And Horus doesn't move at all. And this completely chills out the crowd. Huh. They're like, what just happened?
Stone cold! For the life of Jesus! I'm sorry.
I'm not gonna lie, that's pretty bad impersonation, I think.
What, you mean?
I'm not saying I can do any better.
You mean the smack dude? Yeah, no, it's a terrible impersonation of the smack dude, but...
If you didn't hear what I was saying, you're staying stone cold.
For the love of Jesus. Go watch Smack, y'all, okay? go watch Smack. I can't do the impression. Go watch Smack.
but point is that Horus doesn't move. And then the swordsman, switches to Eric. And Eric doesn't move.
Yeah.
And Svangle doesn't move. And this crowd is like, what the fuck is going on? Because they're waiting. They're ready for it. And he's trying to find the weakest link.
They completely deflate the situation.
Oh, yeah. Completely take away the show. Yep. Completely take it. Completely.
It's not fun anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. You mean when the kid you're bullying just accepts it, you're not happy about doing it? Hell, how dare you?
That's an interesting way of putting
it's
it.
It's true.
That's
fair. And then he tries to find the weakest link, and he looks over at Evelyn. And I put in my notes, I go, ha, I don't think he'll get any movement out of Evelyn.
Oh,
either.
Yeah.
That was my notes. And we cut back to Will. And the situation is, the fat man got there in time with the Tu'alafi and two other dudes. So there's three Tu'alafi. Will is already kind of scurrying up. Illum is on the ground. And basically, the Tu'alafi leader, dude, recognizes the longbow and realizes that he's one of the Rangers.
Yeah.
And he's like, look, we got to get them. We got to get them now. Capture them. So they start attacking Loom. And here Will is. He's hearing off in the distance, not far distance, but the roar of the crowd. He's hearing all these... He's hearing the roars, and roars, and then sudden silence, which we know is because none of the dudes moved. And he's like, and in his head, he's now having this train of thought, which is a suspenseful, which I love how Flanagan does this.
Yeah.
Now he has this like moment of like, oh shit, is he too late? Was he being too slow? And he's having this snap judgment or snap call he has to make. Is he going to help Illum, or is he going to get up there and make sure everything's okay? And he decides to jump down. He shoulders into the Talifi leader, hurting the Talifi's shoulder and back. And he helps pretty much kill the Talifi. Not before Lum could get injured, because Lum is pretty injured now. But he does at least turn that situation. He dissolves that situation. And then he's back to scurrying up to his vantage point. And this whole time, he then hears, because we kind of go back. I'm trying to remember if we go back to, I think we kind of like do like a flip-flop and then flip-flop again. So we go back to Evelyn in the situation, the swords dude. And the sword comes down to Evelyn, and I think it like nicks one of her hairs or something. Mm-hmm. But she doesn't move. And there's like a kind of like, I would assume in my eyes, the whole crowd gasps. That's what I would see. And then all of a sudden you start hearing a lot of people cheering, release her, release her.
And it's the Aridi that have infiltrated.
It's the Aridi. And it's, and then you saw looks, and it's also some of his own men. Which is big and powerful.
Oh, yeah.
And Holt realizes how much of a situation has been caused. And Holt quickly says, I forget what he says, but he quickly takes attention off because he realizes, because he realizes that if something doesn't happen, Evelyn's going to just could get her head chopped off right there with no stop, no hesitation, which does work. You saw, hears his voice and immediately snaps out of it. Basically, he's like, everyone be silent. He raises his own sword. He goes, silence everyone. It's time for the executions. And now we're back to Will. Will's scurrying up. He gets in position. He sees the situation. He sees the executioner raising his hands to come down. And then in my notes, I go, Will is ready. And then in all caps, I go, fuck you, Armin. In my notes. Dot, 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 damn it. Because I don't get to fucking know what happens.
Oh, yes, yes. I cut Chip off right there. Sorry, buddy.
Gosh. That was a good stop. Because that was tough. I was so tempted to read.
Well,
I didn't, because I have self-discipline.
Now you can finish the book.
Okay. But still, so that was literally my notes. I literally go, Will is ready, and fuck you, Arvin, because those were our notes, and I was like, God damn it. Couldn't know the outcome. Ugh.
Well, this is one of my more heinous cliffhangers.
Definitely. Yeah. So yeah, that's where we're at. Alum is injured. I don't think he's bleeding out, but he's injured. Will is just releasing his arrow. There is a dude with a sword about to chop off Holt's head. And the crowd, I would assume the Bedouin see Will finally get to his point, his vantage point, his location, and start to come out. I would assume that this is one of the few times I feel like, because these books are pretty small and the stories within like, the sections of the stories within these books are, you know, within the same book, if not two books. So I think this is one of the few times where I can try and make a prediction about what's actually going to happen.
All right, let's hear it.
My prediction is his arrow is going to hit the hands of the executioner. Not the body.
Okay.
The reason is because if he hits the hands with how much power there is in his arrows, it could knock the hands out of position. So even if they were still to come down, it wouldn't come down the same exact line they were supposed to come down in if he just hit the body, I guess. I guess it's my thought process.
Gotcha.
And as soon as the arrow hits, everyone's going to do the dramatic throw off the cloak and start attacking. And then the horses are going to come charging in. I would find it hard to believe that there's not a situation where the Riddhi and the Bedouin people were told, like a couple of them were told, once they can get up on stage, cut everyone loose and give them weapons or something of the sort, right? Like, I find that hard to believe that wasn't part of the strategy. So I believe that there's some there to basically, as soon as they can, get up on stage and make sure, you know, to guard those who are still bound. I also kind of recall that Umar didn't necessarily say that he needs to be the one to kill Usul, but he doesn't like Usul. I think Ulum is the one who really wants to kill Usul. Yeah. But I don't think Ulum's going to be able to get there. Because he's too injured. Again, I don't really remember how injured he is.
He's pretty injured.
Okay, yeah, I don't think he is. Which, a big thing is, I think Flanagan does a great job. This is a secondary, third, maybe even like a fifth kind of character that we get, right? In this storyline. He's not a main character by any means. But immediately from being, you know, standing up for the Iridi, telling, being self-disciplined, like Armin brings in the notes to page 276, how, you know, the respect for the dude to keep his men alive off two skins of water for 30 guys in 2 days, right? Like, how much respect? That immediately makes us as a reader have a lot of respect and, like, has us at least have some emotional attachment to this character now, right? And so each time we see him now, we're seeing him more and more. We love him. We care about him. We like him. And then we kind of get our heart ripped out because now he's severely injured, right? So it's all these situations. Now, my hope is that Will is able to stop the execution from the initial. And by the arrow through the hands. And my second hope is that he realizes that Usul is the leader and then just puts one in his eyes. Like, puts one between his eyes. I'm not sure how either of those are realistic, but that's my prediction.
We shall see.
I'll make sure to write it down just so I don't forget. Will puts arrow in hands. Will puts arrow between Usul's eyes. But yeah, that's our ending of our section, guys. And probably gonna get off and read the rest of the book, or at least the next chapter, just so I can at least know what the fuck happens. But thank you as always, guys, listening. Please go find us on Twitter. We do have a Facebook. I don't really get on there that much. But if you want to message us, the best ways to get us is Twitter and email. Again, as Armin had mentioned, TDAB Pod, I think is what our email is. I don't even know our email.
TDAB That's Pod or good. TDAB Podcast? It's one of the two.
Yeah, I think
it's TDAB Pod.
Please TDAB Pod. Yeah, at Gmail. It's in the description, like I said. Click read more, you'll see it. Go follow us, go find us. And also, please, let us know how you like the podcast, because we always want to do more. We always, like, if we can do it, make the podcast better, let us know.
Hell yeah.
If there's anything we can do. I have no one I care to win in the Super Bowl. I'm not going to lie, guys.
Oh, yeah, no dog in the fight.
Between the 49ers, I don't know if I'm going to watch it.
I'm probably not going to, but then again, you care a bit more about NFL than I do.
I just care about the playoffs, and this obviously is the national playoff, but like, I would watch it if Detroit was in it.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't think I'm going to watch it, guys. Not going to lie. So, that's 2 weeks away anyway. So, Duke is doing not great in basketball.
That's what we like to hear. That's what we love to hear.
UNC is doing pretty good. UNC is going to slap him again this year. I'm not going to lie.
That's what we love.
Like, I can just feel it. Like, the way UNC is looking when they're playing compared to the way Duke's looking when they're playing.
Hey, you never know, man. That's the one thing about UNC and Duke games. You never fucking know. Like, UNC in their worst year in recent history, upset Duke in, like, one of their best.
I know.
In regular season. Like, it doesn't matter how good either of them are. When one of them steps into Cameron or into Keenan, they're fucking, it's a different game.
Very true. Very true. The one thing I will say this, and I hate to admit it, but UNC will always hold the best year for Coach K's last year. So not only beating him twice in the regular season, but also the Final Four.
His last game. Oh, historic. Ever. His last game loses to UNC.
I know.
Let's be honest. There's no other way.
Which I think is hilarious.
There's no other way. I mean, sure, him going out at a natty would be great for Duke fans.
Yes.
But him
but
going
also,
out
I'm not
going to
lie. For him going out, it's not awesome. It's not bad.
It's
also
the most, like Maul going down to Obi-Wan in Rebels. Like, it's the most, like storied end to that line. Like, it is the most, like, storied resolution there is.
That's fair.
And obviously, as a UNC fan, I'm happy about it. That's probably why I view it that way.
Yeah. And personally, I'm not as happy that Duke lost, but I'm happy it was UNC that beat them. If that
yeah,
makes sense.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It wouldn't be satisfying if it was like Kansas that beat them.
Yeah, or like Villanova or some shit that, right? Like, so
none of those B-list villains.
Yeah, some of them were C-list. Let's be honest here.
I Kansas and Villanova.
Florida.
Yeah, Florida State's a C-list villain, but I'd say Kansas and Villanova are B-list villains.
I'd say Villanova's a B or C-list.
No. To UNC, Villanova's an A-list villain.
All right, fair enough. Kentucky's another A-list villain for Duke.
Yeah, that's definitely true. That's definitely true.
Yeah. But I have nothing else really to say other than fuck you, Armin. So, yeah. What you got, buddy?
No, that's about all there is for me, too. As always, we greatly appreciate y'all dropping in, spending some time with us. Hit us up at the email. We've punched it like four times this episode. Maybe we're getting lonely. But
just me, guys.
No, it's me, too. But regardless, you know, feel free to reach out. We've got some, I think we referenced this last episode, we've got some big moves planned. In the coming months, so hopefully that'll take off some. We're not quite ready to share them yet. Just hopefully I'll be looking forward to that. We're got three books left after this section, in Rangers Apprentice.
Okay.
So
because I'm going through book 10, and then we'll probably take like a interim.
Yeah, we'll take a Murtag hiatus.
Jump back to. Yep. We kind of jump back with Paolini, and then we'll move forward to another series after that.
But yeah, we've got some good stuff planned in the works, so keep listening in, keep dropping in. Let us know if there's anything on your mind. Aside from that, thanks, y'all. Take care.
That's a wrap.
Thank you for listening to a Two Dudes and a Book podcast. Creators are Chip and Armin, and our music is done by Oscar Momento. Thank you and have a great day.